Hello, you're listening to Sean from Galactic Chat, and today I'm interviewing Alan Baxter, a Dittmar Award-nominated British-Australian author of dark fantasy. Welcome to the podcast, Alan.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, look, you describe yourself as a writer of dark fantasy, and your new trilogy is certainly very dark. Where does this impetus to write dark fiction come from?
I don't know, honestly. I get asked that a lot, and the truth is I'm not entirely sure. I just think there's a certain honesty in letting things be as dark as they want to get. It's even if I try to write something that's a little bit lighter and less kind of horrible, it always tends to take a dark turn in the end. I didn't even realize I wrote sort of horror and dark stuff really until people started pointing out how dark a lot of things that I wrote were. So it's just something that seems to come naturally to me, for better or for worse. I do think that if you're going to look in the rabbit hole, you should follow it all the way to the end and see what's there and not chicken out halfway down. So I guess that's the basis of it.
Okay, so in that sense, it's I suppose the only way is up from there, isn't it, really?
Well, maybe. You'd hope so.
All right, now I mentioned your new trilogy, the Alex Kane series, which begins with Bound. It's not your first novel. It's around about your third from my recollection, but it's the first from a big traditional publisher. And I wanted to ask, perhaps, what have you found to be the biggest differences between, so that large publishing and small publishing in terms of editing process, timelines, and pressure?
Honestly, there's not a huge amount of difference. I've got two novels through small press, one and a third sort of collaborative, co-written, just about a novel. It's a very long novella. And as you say, these are the first ones now through a big traditional press. Principally, the process is really very much the same in terms of submissions, readings, getting accepted, and then going through a process of editing and copy edits and everything else. A good small press really will operate the same as a good big press in most ways. The main difference really tends to be the time. You know, the big five traditional publishers tend to operate on a more glacial time scale. Small press has the advantage of being able to sort of jump and dance and do things a lot more quickly. But generally speaking, the process is much the same. What I have noticed as a difference with the big press is that I get to work with a bunch of different people. Like, my editor is the main person that I deal with, but then there's different copy editors and proofreaders and publicists and people like that. And so you've got this kind of big team all working with you. Everything is sort of scaled up, which is great. You know, hopefully it subsequently results in a scaled up readership as well. It's what you hope for. But the general process is basically the same.
Changing modes for a minute there. I notice, and I've obviously been reading your blog for a while, but you also write for video games, more noticeably narrative arcs and the dialogue. And I wanted to ask how you got into that form of writing.
Well, it's just mainly from just sort of being out there. The main thing that I've worked on, which is it's very small time, but it was the thing I had the biggest role with, was being the head writer for an entire game, an open world RPG that was built and designed by the New South Wales Department of Education for teachers to use. And the idea of the game was it was designed to showcase all different types of gaming, like platforming and et cetera, in order to teach teachers how to use gaming in their classrooms so they could use games with kids. And they had all the concepts that they wanted. They needed somebody to write the story, basically, and to write the full narrative. And I got involved with that because one of the people on the development team followed me on Twitter, had read my work, liked my stuff, knew that I was a writer, and knew that I wasn't far from Sydney for the development meetings, and contacted me and said, hey, could you do this? So I jumped at the chance. And subsequently, it's just been that sort of thing, looking out for opportunities, chatting with people in the industry and you know, making myself available when the opportunities are there.
Okay. And I suppose it's similar. You're just talking about big publishing there where you've got a team of people. But I was wondering, how different was the writing, the fiction writing process, being involved in a game situation where there are a lot of team members, I suppose?
It's a very, very different, process. On the one hand, particularly when you're writing dialogue trees, so when characters interact with other characters, The NPC, the non-player character, will say something, and the player will then have a number of options of what they can say in response that will lead to what the NPC says next and stuff. So in those terms, the dialogue is fractal. So you kind of have to write all the options rather than just writing a story. So purely the writing process is different, and the dialogue tree software is very different from writing in general. But otherwise, the old Polish saying, "Not my circus, not my monkeys," comes into effect. And as much as if there's a part of the game that doesn't directly relate to the dialogue that you're writing, you don't worry about it. Somebody else on the development team will do that. If there's a part of the quest where there needs to be, you know, a book with information in it, if your dialogue brief doesn't say, "Write the information in this book," that's someone else's circus. So you just write the dialogue around it. And so you just kind of have to focus in that respect on what you're directly required for, because development teams have got plenty of people doing all the other bits and pieces.
I was wondering how, I mean, it is a bit of a different writing process. How do you think these video game experiences hone your craft in a wider sense?
Well, anything that you write is basically doing the weightlifting and, you know, doing the exercise of writing. So the more variety, in the same way that the more widely you read, the better a writer you become. You know, you read outside your genre, you read in different forms, short stories and novellas, novels, plays, whatever. You read the newspaper, you read nonfiction. It applies to writing as well. When I'm doing freelance writing, articles, writing reviews or dialogue for games or anything like that, it's all different angles of exercising those writing muscles and developing the creativity. So particularly with games as well, you have to have, like, you because if it's written on the screen, people have to read it and respond to it. You can't go into great long Shakespearean soliloquies, you know. You have to kind of have sharp, snappy dialogue. So writing game dialogue can certainly help tighten up the dialogue in your prose, because you get that kind of practice.
Okay, no, I hadn't actually thought of it that way. Huh. Okay, well,
between game dialogue and Twitter, you spend a lot of time on both of those things, you tend to really tighten up your prose.
Excellent. So that's another reason to be on Twitter, folks, listening at home.
Seriously, if you just talking shit and chit-chatting and whatever, then, you know, obviously that's a lot of what Twitter's about. But if you want to say something on Twitter, or you want to sort of encapsulate an idea and you've only got 140 characters, then it's good exercise in sort of brevity.
No, I can agree with you there. I write haiku, and that's wonderful for putting on Twitter. So
absolutely.
Could even go down to 60 characters, I reckon.
Yes.
Now, I first came across your work after reading your blog in Realm Shift and Mage Sign. Between then and now, when you look back, it's not that far back, but what are the biggest changes to your writing, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. Tough. That's like somebody telling you how big your baby's got when you haven't noticed him growing. I would like to think that I'm a better writer now, and that everything has sort of expanded. I'm still exploring similar kind of themes. I try to write as much across genre as I can, and particularly in short fiction, I've been trying to do that a little bit more. Trying to, you know, combinations of horror and crime, or fantasy and science fiction and horror and that sort of stuff. Trying to sort of mix and mash genres a little bit, because I enjoy that so much. And the new books, there's sort of no science fiction in there, but they are sort of a little bit cross-genre in terms of their dark fantasy. They've got horror tropes, they're thrillers, they've got the sort of high fantasy quest ideals behind the first one, certainly behind Bound. I'd like to think that I'm kind of improving and broadening the things that I include and getting better at doing it.
I was going to say that when you're mentioning the sort of meshing between the genres, I found Bound, I finished it, but I haven't had a chance to review it yet. Oh. I found it to be, the thriller pacing was pretty much spot on, and that's probably, in terms of what I've read of yours before, was this, you know, I really like thrillers, so
yeah,
that's good for me. So it's just that, you know, that you hit the ground running and it just never stops until the last page. So that's something that I probably noticed, whereas Realm Shift and Mage Sign were a bit more adventure tales.
I tend to sort of refer to all of them really to some degree as dark fantasy thrillers, because it's very hard to really sort of explain succinctly in a handful of sort of genre words quite what something is, and people do like to be able to pigeonhole. But the thriller nature of the Alex Kane books is definitely ratcheted up from where it was. Like Realm Shift and Mage Sign, like you said, they're a little bit more adventure books. There's a little bit more sort of space in them, but they are slightly longer books as well, about 120,000 words each. The Alex Kane books are all about 100,000 words. I say all, the three so far that have been contracted. Hopefully there'll be more. We never, you know. But so far, yeah, they're all about the 100,000 word mark. But I'm sure that there is some level in there of my improvement as a writer as well, being better at maintaining pace and being better at, you know, keeping that sort of, you know, you have the small lulls. It's like the gaps between the notes in music are what really makes things well. It's not necessarily how long they are, but like where they're placed and how they're built. So hopefully in terms of craft, I'm getting better at doing that. But I do like that, you know, fast-paced thriller sort of process where things, you know, odds just keep getting greater and characters just keep getting in more and more strife, and you keep people excited and page turning. Is that great compliment? You know, oh, I couldn't put it down. That's what you're always looking for with a book. One of these days, maybe I'll try to write, you know, a spaced out literary masterpiece, but it's not really my style.
No worries. I'll be quite happy if you keep writing exactly what you're doing in Bound. So.
Good-o.
Now, you've come on the podcast. You're an old hand at podcasting yourself. You teamed up with David Wood, and you did, I think it was previously called Thrillercast, but it's now called Authorcast.
Yeah, when we hit episode 100, we decided to rebrand because originally it was because there was very little sort of stuff that focused directly on thrillers, and David writes classic sort of adventure thrillers like you know, Indiana Jones and that kind of classic Wilbur Smith type thriller, and I write the sort of dark fantasy and horror with thriller elements. So that's how it started. But we talked so much more about genre in general, writing and publishing in general, that when we hit our 100th episode, we rebranded as Authorcast.
Okay, well I had two questions around that, and I'll just let you answer the first one, and that was what attracted you to doing a podcast in the first place.
Well, when we started, there were far fewer of them around. I mean, we haven't been doing it for that long, certainly not among the first people that were frontiering with podcasting, but we was fairly early on. And it struck us as something that would be kind of interesting to do for ourselves as much as for anything else. And all the time we were sort of learning from it and had interesting things to say, we kept going with it. So, yeah, initially it was the idea of like filling that sort of market niche where there wasn't that much in terms of open genre and thriller sort of chat going on from a writing and reading perspective. So that's kind of where it originally grew from, and we've just carried on with it because it's good fun, and people are still interested, apparently, you know, so all the time we've got listeners, we'll keep doing it.
Yes, it can be a bit lonely on a podcast because people, I tend to get messages from people that say, oh yeah, we listen, but you get very few comments, so you sometimes can feel as though you're talking to the air.
Yeah, it's a surprise sometimes when you realise, oh, people are listening. Wow, okay.
Hopefully it's when you do good stuff, not when you stuff up.
Yes, exactly.
Now, we talked briefly about Twitter before, and in this media age of Twitter and Facebook and whatever gets developed within the next 5 minutes, it's almost impossible to be a reclusive writer. And tied in with the podcasting, what do you think about podcasts being a training ground for authors' media skills?
Interesting. I think anything we do on social media is a training ground for our skills because it's changing so much all the time. You can never keep up all the time, and you can just fuck up so easily in social media with saying something wrong or you know, interacting in the wrong place. But I don't know that necessarily podcasting is the great place to do it, in as much as, like we just said, you don't get that much direct sort of feedback, so you don't really know if you're doing the right thing or not. It's a bit like yelling into the empty air a lot of the time. Certainly it's probably good in terms of getting you used to talking about stuff in real time without the time to sit and think about how you're going to describe your book, and you write a paragraph or whatever, somebody asks you a question, you've got to answer right away. So then subsequently, if you get into the bigger realms of writing where you have book launches and live interviews or radio or all that sort of stuff, it's definitely a good training ground for that in terms of teaching you how to be comfortable talking, you know, or you go to conventions or writers festivals and you have to talk on panels. So in that sort of context, I think podcasting is probably good practice. In general social media practice, I think it's probably better to sort of cut your teeth and get used to things like Twitter and Facebook and whatever else first.
We recorded another podcast with the members of Galactic Chat last night, and we were talking about the other things that, you know, podcasts offer to authors, and that was one of the points that came up. So it was just interesting to hear from another podcaster and another author what the feeling was, and I think we pretty much come to the same conclusion in terms of it's certainly within the science fiction community, it's a fairly accepting, happy-go-lucky community.
Yes.
if you stuff up on a podcast, they're not going to leave it in the podcast or that sort of thing. So, and
that's the beauty of podcasting, is that they usually get edited before they go to air, as opposed to going on radio or something where you say something you can never take it back. But
Yes, I didn't mean to insult half the listeners.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just take that out. Well, it's quite obvious. You write about martial artists, and if I'm reading correctly, you're director of the Illawarra Kung Fu Academy?
Yeah, that's right. I've always taught and trained, and when I moved down to the south coast of New South Wales, I ran a school in Bondi Junction for several years while I was living in Sydney. And then when I moved down here a few years ago, I set up a new school, and that's the other thing I do for income is run the Kung Fu school.
Okay, well, you've done a non-fiction work on writing, fighting, or action scenes called Write the Fight Right. I've just mentioned you're a Kung Fu instructor. What are your pet peeves when authors write about martial arts and or fighting?
I have so many.
That's all right. We've got plenty of time.
Yeah. Fundamentally, there's two things that people usually do wrong when they write fight scenes. And I'll explain in a bit more detail what they are. But the two things mainly are, one, they write too much detail. And two, they don't know fighting, because most people, fortunately, don't. It's my job, but it's good if most people don't really know much about fighting like I do. And so they tend to just transcribe what they do know, which is stuff from movies. So the problem with the first thing of writing too much is that the key element in a fight is frantic chaos, speed and everything like that. And yet quite often when you're reading, you'll be reading a well-paced book and it's really interesting and it's really good, and then a fight will break up and the action will just slow right down because the author starts describing this punch and that grab and this kick and that throw. And it's, and you know, what should be the fastest and most frenetic and conflicted part of the book becomes one of the slowest and most drawn out because the author's trying to choreograph a fight too carefully, you know. And that leads to the second problem, which is that a lot of the time people, they see fights in movies and on TV and stuff like that, and so that's their sort of, that's their understanding of fighting, and so they tend to write like that. But fighting for movies is a very different thing. I've choreographed for film before, and it's very different from real fighting because people are watching it in two dimensions from a remove. So fighters kind of need to take turns a little bit so people can see what's going on. Whereas a real fight is far scrappier and messier and all things happening at once. So, and when we're writing, we can do that. You know, we can write from the perspective of one of the characters and what's happening and the chaos. And we can also include the emotions and the taste and the smells and the sounds and all that stuff because we're writing. We're not at this two-dimensional remove of film. So, yeah, those are really the main pet peeves, is that the writing slows down and becomes very two-dimensional every time there's a fight, which is exactly the opposite of what you want from a scene of great conflict. Yeah.
I've got a few of my favourite thriller authors, and it's interesting, probably the one I always point to is Barry Eisler. I don't know if you've read any of Barry Eisler's work. But
I don't think I have, actually.
Yeah, former CIA, and he's a top-ranking judo practitioner.
Uh-huh.
So you, and he writes exactly like as you suggest somebody should write. It the action is quick and crisp, and for people who know the martial arts, who know judo, he might throw in terms, you know, particular holds, that sort of thing. But for most of us who may not have done judo, it doesn't really matter. He just gives the sense of, you know, the person's being thrown into the wall, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people don't really know the difference between a side kick and a roundhouse kick, or a hip throw and a shoulder throw. And, you know, you don't need that much detail. All you need to know is the guy got thrown or got kicked. And the beauty, it cuts back to that key part of writing fiction, is that you always have to, you know, remember the intelligence of your readers. And when people read, they want their imagination to be inspired, and they'll have this mental picture of what's happening while they're reading. So if you say he kicked him, they'll imagine a kick. If you describe a specific kick, they don't know quite what that kick is. It trips up that mental image that they're building for themselves. So, you know, trust their intelligence to just go with you, and it'll come across a lot better.
And in a sense, then, I think you mentioned film there. Most of us would have seen, you know, close to 20 or 30 fight films, you know, if we're sort of interested in action. So we've got, like, the writer can almost tap into that that archive of imaginative stuff that a reader's going to have already in their brain, so that, you know, what you might be writing... Yeah. Might not necessarily be what the reader's seeing, but they've got something that they can relate to that they might have seen before.
Mm. It's like all description in fiction. Personally, for me, I mean, different people write different things. Like, you know, George Martin will describe the texture of every single thread in every piece of clothing someone's wearing and every detail on their house sigil. But that's kind of his style. But generally speaking, I think it's best in description that you give a few key elements. It's like nails in a wall that the reader will then hang on the tapestry of their imagination, because they've got these key points to hook it on. They fill in the rest, and they get to be, you know, more imaginatively and creatively involved in the reading process. Excuse me. So you need to sort of give enough detail that you get across what you're trying to say, but leave some space for the reader to be involved. That works in terms of character description, in terms of description of place and everything else, and in terms of description of action and fighting, I think.
Aside from your own writing, which authors, and they needn't be in the spec fic scene, but which authors would you recommend as exponents of writing the fight right?
One of the main ones is Robert Parker, who writes the Spencer thrillers. He's someone who I'll always use as an example when I'm doing write the fight seminars and stuff that I do, because he's got this kind of I don't know really what you'd call it, but he's just kind of got this visceral sense to the way that he writes fighting that's always very good. So his name's Robert B. Parker. He's got something like 26 or something Spencer novels out there, and they're these classic sort of cult of the hard man. You know, he's always talking about how, you know, I looked in the mirror and I was looking great today, and I went out and this, that, and the other. And it's classic stuff, but he writes action and fighting really well. He's always the one that I use as the sort of, as a primary example of a good idea on how to do it right. And there's a bunch of people that do, and it depends on the type of fighting as well, you know, in terms of, in, you know, Joe Abercrombie does very well when he's talking about, like battle scenes and sword fighting, and he gets that kind of gritty edge to things that are going on. So he, you know, he tends to do quite well in that scene as well. If you ever want to see a fight done well on film, one of the best ones to look at is the ridiculous fight scene in Bridget Jones' Diary, where Hugh Grant and the other guy whose name escapes me for the minute, they finally break out and have this fight, and they're stumbling around the street and they end up crashing through a restaurant and all this sort of stuff. But it's one of the best fight scenes ever put to film, because they're just a couple of goofs who have no idea how to fight, and it's so realistic in terms of what fighting's really like between people who actually don't really fight. That's another classic one to see in terms of film.
Yes, no, I know that well. I've watched that several times, and yeah, I would agree.
It's just a tremendous scene.
All right. Well, let's talk a bit about Bound and the Alex Kane series, as we've been talking about, it's got thriller pacing in both its fight and sex scenes, and it's dark and a bit sweary. I felt a little bit more adult in its darkness. I don't generally like comparing one author to another, but I've recently got for review one of Jim Butcher's books, and it struck me that not quite the same genre in terms of, you know, his is more crime or noir sort of background. But I felt that, Bound was a little bit more adult than that. And did it surprise you how dark you were allowed to be in what I'd describe as commercial fiction?
Well, to a degree, yeah. I mean, it is. I do get comparisons to Jim Butcher a lot, and I guess that's probably because of that, the whole kind of like urban fantasy kind of vibe. But I tend to write, I guess, a bit sort of like R-rated Jim Butcher in terms of sex and violence and language and stuff like that. And it's like the books were written when they sold to Harper Voyager, and I wondered how hard I might get edited on some parts, particularly on a couple of scenes, without giving too much away, but, you know, there's some scenes involving kids and stuff like that. And I wondered how much that sort of stuff might get edited and how much language might get edited. And I actually got edited very, very little in those terms. So, yeah, I did wonder how much of a deal with the devil I would make if I sold to a big commercial publisher, and then how much I might have to change what I'd written, because Bound was always supposed to be, it's like the dark fantasy, the sort of underlying principle of what I was trying to do with it was write something that was fundamentally using the sort of framework of the classic high fantasy quest, where there's big odds and something needs to be found and there's other people that want it and there's, you know, there's danger on every corner and that kind of thing. So you use that high fantasy quest and mix it with that thriller sort of pacing. But I always wanted to do it in a sort of dark fantasy horror framework, which is what I hope that I've done. But then because I was doing those things and not holding back when the dark things happened, parts of it did get very dark. So, and that's cool, you know, it's that old adage, you know, you don't write for a market, always write what you want to write and write what you want to read. And with any luck, you'll find other people out there that want to read it too. So that appears to be what happened. I wondered if I would get edited on some of the darkest parts of it, but yeah, I didn't. So.
That's interesting. Mm. I was thinking that it's not that. For example, if we pick on the swearing that's in the book, it's not over the top. It's within character, that sort of thing.
Right.
And I wonder how often, you know, you do get books where the main character is a tough, you know, in your case, he's a basically an underground cage fighter.
Mm.
So it's not like he's going to be, you know, talking with a plum in his mouth. So
yeah, I find it very frustrating a lot of the time when you get that sort of stuff, where you get a situation where you've got really hard characters, you've got really gritty situations, you've got really big stakes and big odds. And, you know, we act and talk in a far darker way than general fiction, just in everyday life a lot of the time. So when you put people in these really extreme situations and yet they're still kind of polite and they don't swear and, you know, people don't have sex or whatever, it strikes me as, it kind of frustrates me sometimes. I can see a story that would be so much better if it was told with that honesty and realism of how dark things can really get. And absolutely, it's all in character. And, you know, I try to make sure that characters are varied, you know, as much as possible. You want your characters to be three-dimensional. You don't want them all to be reflections of the same person and everything else. But the violence and the swearing and everything else is, hopefully, the intention is never gratuitous, but it's always within character and within plot, so that it maintains that kind of, yeah, that sort of that feasibility, you know, that it's done for the right reasons. I never want to write just, you know, darkness for shock value. There's no, you know, no, I don't want shock gore for shock or dark and horror. I don't want swearing just for shock. It always needs to be real to the story, and hopefully that's what I do.
I thought so. I found the giving away the review here, but I did find it to be quite an enjoyable, well-paced read. And,
oh, I'm glad.
I'm looking forward to seeing the next two come along. We don't often talk about being fathers and writers, but you're home today. You've got a baby son, new baby son. I wanted to ask, how has fatherhood changed not only the physical act of getting, you know, fingers on keyboards that aren't covered in baby food, and the process of writing yourself, so physical and mental, I suppose?
Yeah, well, purely getting to the keyboard, my wife and I we sort of regularly negotiate time and days where, because she's an artist, she's a painter, she spends time in the studio, and so we regularly negotiate sort of time and days so that we each get our days at work, basically, that we then fit around the Kung Fu Academy that we run, because she also teaches there, and so we kind of make everything fit, and nap time just becomes gold, because I'll get a day when she's looking after our boy, so I can concentrate and I can write in the writing time, go and teach when I need to. And then on days when I'm looking after him, every time he goes down for a nap, it's gold. Bang, get on, get some writing done or get some work done in one way or another. So it tends to make procrastination a thing of the past, because you grab whatever time you can. But then again, I sort of train myself for that, because Realm Shift, my first novel, was written during my lunch hours at a 9-to-5 job, because it was really, I was working a 9-to-5, I was teaching and training in the evenings, and I really wanted to write as well, but didn't have a lot of time. And so 5 days a week, every lunch hour, I'd make a sandwich, take it back to my desk and work on the novel. And that's how I wrote the first novel. So I'm used to that process of compartmentalizing and zoning quickly in order to write. It's a skill that you can develop along with all the other parts of the craft, but you have to make time to write. You're not going to find it. You know, you have to make it happen. In terms of mentally, everybody said to me that, your writing will change. You won't be able to write such dark stuff. You certainly won't be able to write bad things happening to kids or whatever. But the first story I sold after my son was born was to Daily Science Fiction, that was just published very recently, which is a really horrible thing happening to a child. So I seem to, maybe I'm a psychopath. I seem to be immune to that so far. Yeah, it hasn't so far changed, at least as far as I can tell. I certainly haven't started writing about puppies and rainbows yet.
No, I was interested in the answer to this question because of a certain scene in Bound, so we'll leave that for the readers to discover.
Well, actually, it was interesting that when the process of... But when I sold the trilogy, I had the first two books written and the third book just started. And when the sale went through, based on a trilogy and based on delivering books by a certain date, the third book had to be delivered by the end of January, but my son was due at the end of October. So I knew I had to get it finished before he was born, so at least I had a draft to work on, and all that worked out fine. But it meant that right after he was born and the edits started coming back, the first 2 or 3 months that he was around, I was going through the edits for Bound. And so the scenes that you're talking about, I was working with a brand newborn son, and I must be a psychopath because it didn't bother me at all.
Well, perhaps then on that happy note, that brings me to the end of my questions. I wanted to thank you for coming on the show, Alan.
No worries. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you.
And I'd like to say good luck with the Alex Kane series. The first book, called Bound, as we've been mentioning, should be out in stores by the time this goes to air.
It's actually just started landing in stores this week. Yeah, I've seen it in a couple of places and a couple of people have sent me photographs. It's very exciting.
Well, then it should most certainly be out by the time this goes up. All right, then. Thanks again, Alan.
No worries. Thanks, Sean.